This is Business Impact, a podcast series from UCD College of Business, Ireland's leading business school. I'm your host, Emmett Oliver, and each episode I'll be joined by world-renowned faculty from across the College of Business, as well as international industry leaders who'll offer us insight, spark curiosity, and challenge you to rethink how you do business in a changing world. Now, you're very welcome to another edition of Business Impact as we rattle through the terrible rain and terrible weather conditions of recent weeks at the time of recording. A little bit of an apprehensive time for you, the listener, just to give you an idea on college campus here at UCD Business School. Lots of people getting exam results, a lot of people sort of digesting the first semester as they ease into the second semester. So there's a general fear of kind of what the future holds. But equally on the other side of that, the spring is coming on its way. So a lot of students and staff are getting to like the longer days. They only need some sunshine to make their day a little bit more brighter and livable. Now, we've got a great podcast for you today because we're going to be talking about big issues, like big things in economics, big things in finance. Some of the subjects that have really preoccupied the interest of people in these areas for not just decades, but for centuries. The ideas of competition, how do different markets behave? How can we guarantee the rights of consumers, but also make and allow companies to make a reasonable profit and return to allow them to continue to reinvest and so on? So these are big topics. Some of them have been tackled by some of the biggest thinkers in the field of economics over the years. So we're hoping to add a little bit of a bright new light onto it and some Irish content as well, and also looking at things equally in a global context too. So my guest is going to help me with all of that. It is a big list. It's an ambitious list. And her name is Catarina Marvo, and she's our first Portuguese guest that we've ever had on the podcast. And she can explain all of that in a second. She is a lecturer here at the UCD Business School, and she's also an assistant professor in these areas of finance and economics. Catarina, you're very welcome.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Yes, it's great to have you. As I said, you're breaking new ground, our first Portuguese guest we've ever had. So yeah, you're going to be making a milestone no matter what here today. So tell us a little bit about yourself and the kind of areas you work in particular.
Right, so I have a very traditional academic route. So I did my undergrad in economics. I fell in love with economics and with firm behavior straight away. Then I moved on to do a master's in Belgium in Louvain-la-Neuve. And then eventually I came to Dublin to do a PhD in Trinity College, where I mostly focus on competition economics. So during my PhD, I worked with a lot of people, including in the US, on collusion and sort of different misbehaviors. I then went on to do a postdoc again at Stockholm School of Economics, again on firms' misbehaviors and firm competition. Then I spent some time at UW and now I'm at UCD Smurfit School. So I've just really always been fascinated by how firms behave, mostly when competition is weak, and also then how they start to misbehave when the market discipline isn't there.
Yes, I was amazed to see the word antitrust across a lot of your work because we don't actually use that phrase that often in Ireland. Maybe that's an interesting idea in itself. We do share personally a man called Professor Frank Barry, who we've both worked with in different contexts on the research side. So just to mention him in passing, there is a connection between the two of us there. But let's get back to the whole area of competition. A lot of people think competition is a good thing. It's generally seen within the economics community as something we should try for, that it's good virtually in most cases. Now, sometimes during war, it may be suppressed for particular reasons. There are other periods where people think, you know, it could be dangerous competition. It could be competition that maybe brings the industry down because there isn't enough custom or demand in that particular industry. But generally, it's seen as a good for the public to have a certain level of competition. Is that what interested you in that topic, or was it just how it's all put together and the modeling and all that side of things?
The short answer to your question, is competition important, is yes. That's, I guess, the economist's answer, but it's not sort of a simple answer. So we don't think of competition as an end in itself. So it's not some sort of moral ideal that we're trying to achieve. We care about competition because if markets work well, so if we have well-designed markets, competition tends to give us what we want. So we want lower prices, better quality, more innovation in firms, and just higher consumer welfare. More competition isn't always better if you think of things like natural monopolies. So settings where it makes sense to have one main firm, say, like utilities, or if you have markets with very large fixed costs, or in banking systems where if you have a lot of short-term competition, that could sort of undermine stability and sort of encourage risk-taking. So in that sense, competition sort of has to be carefully balanced with regulation. But in general, yes, we want competition. Here also, it's important to distinguish competition from concentration, so how many firms we have in the market. The real danger is not concentration, but it's market power without being accountable, without firms being accountable. So if firms don't have competitive pressure and there isn't sort of regulatory oversight, then what we have in the market is we have higher markups, so high price-to-cost margins, we have weak innovation, and we tend to have misconduct. So things like price-fixing cartels or other types of cartels, abuse of dominance, misreporting, money laundering, all the illegal stuff.
Is it hard to balance all the interests? As you said, we do get two really strong direct benefits. We get lower prices and we get competition, so we might get innovation, better quality products, as you've said. Is it hard to also bring into that picture, you know, wages of people in the company? So in other words, workers might say, well, hang on, it's great to have competition, but it mightn't be good for me if I'm in one of the companies that gets squeezed out and so on. So is it hard to balance all those interests when we look at the level of competition? The context can be very important.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's about power, right? So it's not, we don't want firms to just be breaking even, or we don't want firms to have low profit margins necessarily. So what really harms consumers and sort of economic growth isn't that a firm might be dominant in a market for a short period of time. It's when market power becomes sort of unchecked.
Yes. Now, I was going to ask you, and this is a very difficult question to answer, and I don't in any way expect anything like a definitive answer, but I just actually be interested in even a partial answer, because I think you're at the coalface of a lot of these issues here in Europe. But is the level of competition at the moment we have globally, you know, is it in a good place? A lot of people will see some very powerful technology companies. Obviously, we see them connected to particular politicians at the moment. We do see a lot of pricing pressure coming through. We've had a big bout of inflation all over the Western world for the last 2.5 years or thereabouts. So we're seeing a lot of very big companies. We're seeing, as you've said yourself, levels of concentration in particular segments of markets at a very high level. It obviously depends what tool you use and the data behind that, but it generally seems to be quite high in particular segments at the moment. We're seeing pricing pressure across all sorts of areas, energy, food, services and so on. So are you concerned in any way at the general global picture of competition that we kind of have a bit of a problem at the moment? Normally when we see high inflation, we then automatically default to say competition is not at where it should be. Would you generally have sympathy with that view?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Emmett. The issue isn't sort of that we have few firms in a market. It's that market power has become more persistent across lots of different sectors in the economy. And you're exactly right. What we see is higher prices, so or higher markups, right? So we like to think about price to cost margin. We see more concentration, we see businesses being less dynamic. It doesn't mean that competition has disappeared, but it definitely suggests that markets have become less contestable, so that it's harder for new firms to enter markets and challenge sort of the big firms that are already set up in the markets. There's been a big debate related to this about the European champions. So there's been made the argument that Europe needs these European champions, these very large firms, to compete globally, especially against large firms from the US and China. But economists haven't really agreed on this. So some might argue that we need this scale for innovation, for, well, defense, for being strategic. But on the other hand, if we relax competition rules to create these European champions, then we might sort of risk entrenching market power at home. And that might also bring some costs for consumers and firm productivity.
Is there a particular problem in the tech sector? I know that's you're more on the retail and banking side, but you've done some work in this area. So is there a particular problem where these companies may have not necessarily a monopoly position, but they have proprietary technology that kind of means that they don't really face competition for a period? They almost have like a patented drug, even though it's not a drug, but they have a piece of technology that they have developed, and that's a good thing. But it means that others just don't have that technology, whether it's in AI or some other area like that, in hardware or software and so on. or it's just a network that they control when you look at the social media side. So is there a sort of a problem that it's not necessarily that these companies are killing off and squashing all competition? They just happen to have and have developed a market leading position that in time may be eroded, but it could take quite a while for that to happen. Is that a particular area of competition that is tricky to deal with?
Yeah, you're right. If you think of Google, Google has become a verb, right? To Google something, because everyone just tends to use Google and not other search engines. So these companies have been fined a lot for abuse of dominance, these large tech companies. The problem here is that, you know, they've established their position as a near monopoly in the market. Even when they're fined for abuse of dominance or collusion or other misbehaviors, their fines are so tiny that we're really not sending a strong signal that, you know, they shouldn't misbehave. So they get away with doing a lot in the market.
Yes, I suppose the power of governments is even kind of constrained to try and deal with them, and regulators and so on. I'll talk in a few minutes just for our listeners' benefit. You're involved in work with both the Central Bank and the Competition Commission in Ireland, which we'll get into in a few minutes. But just to mention that, so when I say you're at the coalface, you literally are. You have done some work in the retail area in your research. Can you tell us a little bit about what that sector in particular, which we're all familiar with and has been long studied in the competition area, what you learn from looking at that particular part of the market, including luxury goods and so on?
Yeah, so retail is one of those sectors in the economy where competition policy actually matters a lot for our everyday lives. So you can think of groceries, or you can think of, you know, handbags, fuel, telecoms, online shopping. That's all linked to the cost of living, which in Ireland has, you know, the rising cost of living has been very debated. These sectors tend to be highly concentrated. So we have a few very large firms, and we also tend to see some misbehaviors in this sector. So that's where sort of cartels or tacit coordination tends to emerge. Recently, I was personally interested in the Capri Holdings and Tapestry merger. So these Capri Holdings and Tapestry, they own Michael Kors, Versace, Jimmy Choo, Coach, Kate Spade, and as a competition economist and someone who likes shoes and handbags a lot, I was really interested. I was trying to figure out what was going to happen and should these two firms merge or not. In the end, the merger was blocked. But what the firms were sort of arguing is that these brands, say, think of Versace, Jimmy Choo, Coach, that they didn't actually compete, that consumers could easily switch between the different brands, which with luxury goods is not really that way. So with this merger, we're worried about sort of the portfolio of the brands, and that retail in luxury handbags and shoes could look competitive because you'd have a lot of different name brands. But what actually really matters is how many independent pricing decisions were being made, right? So if they all belong to the same group, then there's a coordination that would take away consumer choice and have other negative effects on consumer welfare.
And it's one of the issues you have in all these things you've looked at, these cases that you've looked at, that the companies will come along, as you've said earlier, and they'll say our margins are getting squeezed and we're not as profitable as we used to be. We can't reinvest to make the company sustainable for the future. And if we don't get approval for this particular merger or acquisition, you know, we may have to lay people off. We may have to shrink down and do a downsizing. And in a strange way, the regulators kind of have a gun put to their head a little bit by the companies who obviously have, you know, big lobbying and public affairs departments and so on behind them. Is that a tricky kind of area for regulators, that it's kind of like either let us do this consolidation or you guys will be kind of blamed for what happens if we don't get to do it? Do you see that across Europe and in lots of cases?
Yeah, absolutely. But then you have to balance it with, if the merger does happen, so you're by definition taking away one firm from the market, so you're creating less competition, right? So from the other side, what you'd have is higher prices, lower innovation, higher markups from having less competition in the market. So regulators are trying to balance these two sides of, you know, you want a firm to be able to survive in the market and not just struggle, but also you want competition in the market. Yeah, so it's a hard one. With the Capri and Tapestry, I was just personally interested in this. And to me, it was sort of obvious that, you know, if all these luxury brands belong to the same group, then you sort of don't really have choice, right? Then they can very easily coordinate on loads of different aspects.
Yeah, it's a strange one because, I mean, you look at Ryanair, for example, and that this is just me talking here now, but I mean, they obviously have a very strong position out of Dublin Airport and a lot of other European airports. But as a company, they're still seen as being very pro-consumer, even though they hold a large market position and a lot of pricing power. So the way we look at these things is kind of can be interesting and can change over the years. One word I wanted to focus on that you used was the word cartel, which a lot of people, you know, kind of find an interesting and intriguing word because it sounds like something from the silver screen. Sometimes or mostly it's usually illegal for companies to collude on pricing to get control and set pricing levels across. But it hasn't always been the case. You know, there's been periods where governments have encouraged the growth of cartels. The Irish banks, for example, for many decades were an official cartel. So where are we with cartels now? Are they always bad for our listeners? Like in all circumstances, are governments right to occasionally say, hey, for other reasons, we don't mind having this cartel and we want to keep it going for a few years?
Right. So, I mean, cartels are illegal. So we see it as a bad thing. So cartels are essentially agreements between firms that are meant to be competing, and they might agree on, say, the price or some sort of costs or share sensitive consumer information. Price fixing would be the most common type of cartel. So this is typically, you know, your CEOs get together in a hotel room and they discuss prices, and that's it. And that's the price that everyone will see. So this is illegal. They're usually secret because if you're detected, you get a fine. In Ireland, we've just changed legislation, which is really interesting. We only had criminal sanctions for cartels, so we found it really hard to actually convict cartels, to impose the criminal sanctions. And now we can impose civil sanctions as well on cartels. But they're very hard to detect. There's some numbers out there that suggest we only detect 10% of cartels. So, you know, they're really secret. Historically, cartels weren't seen as such a bad thing. Some governments in some periods actually encouraged cartels. And the logic was that cartels could stabilize markets. So the firms would coordinate on a price, they'd produce less, so they'd reduce their output in a sort of coordinated way, and they'd avoid sort of failure. Right? So cartels were viewed as a substitute for not having macro stabilization tools. So there was also a dominant thinking of sort of your, don't want to get into European champions, but sort of a similar thinking that protecting national companies and just not letting them fail. Over time, we realized that this is not the way to do it. We realized that cartels actually sustain lots of inefficient firms. They protected weak firms. They delayed sort of necessary restructuring of sectors and didn't actually speed up recovery. They slowed it down.
Yeah, it sounds like you're effectively saying we don't want to go back to that era. It didn't really have good social outcomes long term.
Absolutely. So once we develop central banks and sort of active fiscal policy, then the justification for having legal cartels, that disappeared. Some of my work, which I sort of got in a random way, is about cartels in Sweden. So I did my postdoc there and I worked closely with the competition authority in Sweden. And cartels were legal until 1993, which is, you know, not that long ago. So it's interesting because cartels were legal, but they had to register. If you didn't register your legal cartel, you'd have to pay a fine or serve some time in jail. So it's sort of the opposite of what we have now. If now you're in a cartel and you're discovered, you have to pay a fine or go to jail. In Sweden until 93, it was the opposite. But what that means is that we have this amazing register of cartels and details of firms and their agreements. So it's really nice to look at the data and see, you know, if firms can collude, what do they actually do?
Yes. And of course, we have OPEC, the biggest cartel of them all, still out there and recognized on a global level. But that's a whole different conversation to have for another day. Yes. Now, I know you're looking at cartels specifically in Ireland and the regime here and how good you've been mentioned already. Just detection can be difficult and there has been cases taken, but of course, lots of people are never happy with the level of enforcement. But tell us a little bit about your work in that area, just specifically in an Irish context.
About 2 years ago, I was appointed as a non-governmental advisor for the CCPC, the Irish Competition Authority. So I'm working in the area of cartels. So this involves having sort of international discussions on cartel enforcement. How can we deter cartels and detect them, since it's so hard to actually detect cartels? Since this ECN Plus directive, which is a EU directive, now Ireland can impose civil fines on collusion. And we just had the first conviction in a long time. There was recently a case on school bus drivers, a cartel on it, and he was just convicted in court in January or December, maybe. So that's great because we, you know, it's sending a strong signal to the market that, you know, you're not allowed to collude. We'll try to detect any cartels that we have in the market and impose strict fines. So we're not sure in the school bus cartel, the fine hasn't been decided yet, but, you know, there's a conviction.
Yes. Now, a lot of people listening to that sort of story will say, you know, that's good and it's good to see that. But they might say that's the school bus arena. You know, is it more tricky to do something like that against large, well-established companies that have more resources? Obviously, that is more difficult. So is that the sort of the test to see enforcement in, you know, taken against companies that are well-resourced and that have very large market positions?
It's harder. Bigger firms that are involved in cartel also learn how to, you know, hide evidence, and they become better at just hiding collusion in general. So that'll be harder, but it's a good signal for Ireland that we're now enforcing cartel legislation and that we're starting to convict cartels again. So hopefully we'll have some positive outcomes in the future.
Now, another area of that kind of polices firms, there's obviously the regulators, there's the government, there's company law, there's criminal law, and there's consumers can, you know, boycott companies and so on. But the final one is the market. And there's this quaint idea that a market will supervise and police companies, and they will be punished if they behave recklessly, irresponsibly, and, you know, don't oversee the fiduciary responsibilities they're entrusted with. So the market will get banks or retailers or tech companies and sort of, you know, punish them for misbehavior and running their companies in a bad or irresponsible way. But a lot of your research is kind of questioning of this idea, and you've seen the opposite happening in a lot of cases. Can you tell our listeners just about what you've discovered?
So if you think about deterrence, it's really hard to measure, right? Because you're trying to measure what firms would have done if we didn't have some sort of policy in place. So the only evidence that we have of actually deterrence of misbehaviors of cartels is in the US, where CEOs actually go to jail. So we know that spending time in prison is actually a deterrent for collusion, even though, you know, this can be compensated for. If, you know, if you're not spending so long in jail, you might be willing to collude and get a big severance package or something. But fines tend to be small. Now there's a new thing in Europe, which is becoming bigger, which is damages. If you've suffered, you know, a loss from, say, a cartel, you're entitled to for restitution. So you can claim back the damages from the cartel. So this is increasing fines a little bit through the private sector. But one of the things that's really interesting for me is that if you think of banks, they're sort of a different sector. Right? So all the other sectors are private and public firms, but banks are a little bit different. And one of the puzzles that I look at in my work is why bad behavior in banking or in banks is so often not punished by markets. Right? So if you see that a firm is caught misbehaving, usually you'd expect a strong market reaction. You'd expect, say, if you think of listed companies, you'd expect their stock prices to drop. But for banks, you don't really see an effect. Right? So that reaction in the stock market is very often just muted. So this raises the question of, are banks or some banks actually too big to fine? Right? So maybe markets don't punish misconduct, and that means that we don't really have deterrence, because then deterrence would fully rely on regulation, enforcement, rather than market discipline, right? So this then creates risks for consumers, for financial stability more broadly. So this is something we worry about.
So is it essentially saying there may be a small drop in the share price in the 24 hours after the disclosure of you know, problems with regulation or misbehavior, but it bounces back and the company just kind of goes on smoothly enough from there? Is that what you've discovered?
No. So actually for banks, you either see no reaction when the fine is announced or a positive reaction. So that means that, you know, you might just be relieved that the fine is small and you can go on with business as usual. Whereas for all the other non-banking firms, we see a drop. When the fine is announced, we see a drop in their stock price. So So this just isn't there for banks.
Is it possibly because the share price drops when the media coverage starts at the start? And as you say, you know, the media coverage, it drops and is reflected. But then, as you say, it's not quite as bad. So there's a sort of a slight relief rally. Is that possibly which might explain the pattern?
Yes. So that's part of the results. When there's an investigation announced in the media, there's a small drop in the share price of banks. But that's still smaller than the drop in the share prices of non-banks.
So what do you put it down to? Do you think that simply the fines are too low, or the investors don't appreciate the full risks, or they're looking very short term, so they're not that worried about the long term damage? Or, you know, there's a number of possible explanations, I suppose, in there.
So, I mean, banks are a little bit different because you don't want banks to actually collapse, right? If they pay a very large fine and they end up collapsing, then you have a run to the banks and consumers lose trust in banks. So you don't want to start that, right? So you're trying to balance preventing misbehaviors and punishing them when they happen, and also keeping consumers' trust in banks and keeping banks, you know, alive. So it's a balancing act between the two, yeah.
Yeah, maybe instead of fines, they might go, you know, possibly just halt dividends for a year or two. You know what I mean? Like just something more definite. I'm not suggesting that, but just the type of fines and the regime it might be changed. Maybe that's what we need to do there as wider society. Can I bring you on to just a more broad talk about, finally, before, because we're under pressure. This is fascinating stuff, by the way. We need to go and do this again in a few months' time. Because a lot of consumers are obviously very keenly interested, acutely interested in the competition world. The level of competition, is there things we can do? One way we can obviously do is get new firms in there, but that's difficult in certain sectors because you need a lot of capital to get started. We can, you know, we can cap a certain level of concentration. So we can say to firms, you can't have any more than 20% or whatever it is. Or we can just, you know, change the environment so that, you know, firms can grow and expand, and we can make more, profits. Let them grow, so they can others can be attracted in. I think we're seeing this a little bit with the banking market in Ireland. It's a small market, so is there enough to sort of incentivize and induce competitors to come in? So, which one of those options do you tend to favor, or are you seeing in your research that is the best kind of method? Obviously, it changes in different countries and different sectors, but is there something we can all do at the state or through our regulatory agencies to try and boosts the level of competition more generally?
Yeah, I think we're at a time where, you know, markets are changing so quickly. Think about digital markets, and there's just new types of misbehaviors and just new behaviors every day. That sort of competition is sort of harder to sustain automatically. I'm probably cautiously optimistic about the future of competition in markets and globally. But I think if we have strong institutions, so strong regulators that actually do their job, I think, you know, we'll have great things coming. There's new and new issues, and it's just these issues are growing every day. We have things like common ownership, we have financialization, we have these more digital platforms, algorithms that we have to deal with. And, you know, there's just more pressure on regulators and also political pressure on regulators.
The tricky bit for people like yourself, I guess, is that a lot of the competition happens internationally. So Ireland is a great example of a lot of the companies you talk about, particularly in the tech area, but in retail as well. They're global companies. You know, they happen to be in the Irish market, but they're not headquartered here, and they don't have to be in the Irish market. It's a nice to have, but it's not absolutely vital for their operations. So it's very hard to kind of then, you know, use their regulatory powers against those companies, because A, they could just exit out of the market and say, well, we won't be here. And secondly, as you've said earlier, fines tend to be very small when measured against their global sales. So is it a particular issue in smaller economies because the scale issues that makes competition very difficult to encourage?
I guess yes and no. So any sort of misbehaviors that affects more than one or more than two EU countries, they're dealt with by the European Commission. So that's not our job to, to find them. What we know is that, you know, if there's not sufficient oversight from regulators, we tend to have a lot of market power. So I think that's sort of the main thing that we need to worry about, is having strong institutions that create deterrence and that can detect misbehaviors and prevent sort of this unchecked market power.
Yeah, and I suppose you're very much being asked for your opinions at the moment, Katrina, because inflation has been so high, right? So these issues come to the surface. Like, when inflation is low, everyone kind of forgets about competition and regulation and cartels and all the rest. But we then drag the subject back out when inflation goes higher. And that's understandable because there is at least some relationship between those two things. So I'd say you're pretty busy right now and have been pretty busy for the last 6 months because of this inflation issue.
Yeah, it's an exciting time for research, I mean, maybe not for consumers so much. So you have inflation, and if you have then all these misbehaviors and market power, that's going to increase prices further. Yeah, you're not getting out of this circle. So with increased inflation comes, you know, a lot of businesses are pass-through of the costs to consumers. That gives them an extra incentive to coordinate on prices, on outputs, on to misbehave, especially if they think that they won't be detected for misbehaviors, or that even if they're detected, that their fine is very small.
Yes, and I don't mean this personally. I hope you're less busy in the next the next year or two as those trends slightly ameliorate. But listen, best of luck with all the work. As I said, you're doing good academic work in UCD, and then you have your two outreach positions at the moment with the Central Bank and the Competition Commission. So you're very much in the live end of the research, the applied piece of it. So Katarina Marvo, thank you very much for joining us on Business Impact. It's been a fascinating conversation.
Thank you very much, Emmett.
Now, if you enjoyed this week's episode of the UCD Business Impact Podcast, please subscribe to episodes on Apple Podcast or Spotify. We cover a broad range of topics with insights from business leaders around the world, so there's sure to be something there for everyone. I'd like to thank our production team of Beth Gormley and Mike Liffey. They work tirelessly in the background, sourcing interviewees, editing, promoting episodes, and everything in between. I've been your host, Emmett Oliver. We hope you can join us next time on UCD Business Impact.